Hello, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Money, money, money. Money. Money, 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 money. Or, how does the Money in the Bank do another theme song? They do money, 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 money. Yeah. You know what we're here for? WWE Money in the Bank. Review and results. This is episode number 66 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast, coming to you live from the Rocket Wrestling Connection in Cleveland, Ohio. We are here to review everything about Money in the Bank and break it down. Couldn't do it on Sunday night, but we are here now. And you know what? The fact that SmackDown is over with and we're coming on live after SmackDown already happened, we can probably even give you more insight as to why they did what they did at Money in the Bank. So I think everything's going to work out great for us. And I think it's going to be a fun show. I hope all of you guys, you know, will enjoy it. Just got word, just seen some things online. Well, one was from AIW referee Dave Dawson. I seen a post, and if you remember him, he was on here like, I think it was like episode 15 or 18, somewhere around there of the podcast. He was on, and just to speak out on this real quick, one of the lead guys that run AIW, because it's John Thorne and Chandler Biggins. One of the lead guys, Chandler Biggins, he passed away yesterday, or it was either yesterday or early this morning, but I was shocked because Chandler Biggins, what's his wrestling name? His real name is Chris Bryan, but he's a young guy, a real young guy. And, in the indie scene, the wrestlers and everybody that works in AIW, some of them, I think they even, I don't know if they had t-shirts made, but I know some of them would just say, it was kind of like the Paul Heyman guy thing. They would say, I'm a Chandler Biggins guy. And, I remember I talked to him a couple times. He, would take my order when I'd be, going up to order tickets, like when I went with Johnny Gargano, and Johnny Gargano said put my name on the list to go see his final indie show. Chandler Biggins was the one that took care of me and got me on the list and got me, situated to go to that show. So, I was shocked. I was shocked to read it. That was one of the things I was reading on my phone, during SmackDown review. And I guess it happened late last night, early this morning. He passed away. I know he's been battling health problems from what I've heard, throughout the past couple months. And then, didn't really hear much. So I figured, he's getting better. That was the last I heard. And now he's passed away. And, it definitely sucks. I know Absolution 12 definitely is going to be dedicated in his honor now, which is going to be AIW's WrestleMania. And, when I go back there, it's going to be different. I'll see John Thorne walking around over there, but I won't see Chandler Biggins, behind the counter, either helping people, to buy tickets or buy DVDs. It's going to be a little weird because, Chandler Biggins, Chris Bryan, if you want to call him by his wrestling name or his real name, he was a good guy. And, for me being an AIW fan, I just wanted to take the time to say, send my prayers to, Chris Bryan, Chandler, aka Chandler Biggins, his, friends and family, send prayers to them, and, rest in peace, Biggins, AIW, it surely isn't gonna be the same without you, but I know everybody that goes to the AIW shows, you know, myself included, none of us will ever forget you. That's for sure. I know this, this podcast, you know, was a WWE, themed podcast, but that was one thing I definitely wanted to address because I found out this news, especially when, you know, someone from, you know, AIW that was on the show, like I said, referee Dave Dawson, and, you know, I've gotten to know people over there over my time of going there, and Chandler Biggins was one of them, and he was actually the first guy I ever bought a DVD from when I went to see that show, when EC3 was at the Willoughby South High School. He was one of the first AIW people that worked for that company that I ever talked to, and now just to hear, you know, that he's gone, it's, I don't know, it seems like just everybody is leaving us lately, you know, it just feels that way, like, I don't know what's going on, it's like the world is just being relentless, it's not stopping, you know, it's just hard. I mean, you know, if a celebrity dies, you know, that's one thing. You know, because, you know, like, yeah, you definitely feel for them, of course, because they're a human being. But the point is, you know, these are people that you really don't talk to, you know, so it's easier to get over. But, you know, like, I know a lot of people that work the indie scene. They probably heard the name. I'm sure a lot of people know him. Maybe some people haven't met him, but one thing I can say is I knew Chandler Biggins and I talked to him every time I was there. And always a really nice guy. And just to hear that and read that on social media a couple hours ago, that was, I had to take a double take. At that, because it just took me by surprise, but just want to say again to Chandler Biggins, aka Chris Bryan, you know, we're thinking of you, our prayers are with you and your family, and, rest in peace, buddy. And, Absolution 12, I'm sure everybody's gonna knock it out of the park for you in your honor, so. Hopefully they make it a great show, like I know AIW can. And, in Biggin's honor, I wanna play the introduction from a man that, one of the original Chandler Biggins guys, you know, because before he, made it in TNA Impact Wrestling, Mr. EC3, real name Michael H. Hutter. He was, working for AIW with Biggins. With Biggins, you know, booking him in matches. Biggins and John Thorne actually, you know, giving him the dates, booking him in matches. So I could say, you know, one of the original Chandler Biggins guys, Mr. EC3. It's only fitting to have him open up this show. And then we're going to take you on to Money in the Bank. So, here's EC3, the man himself. You guys sit tight, and I will be back with you in just a few seconds, and we'll start breaking down Money in the Bank coverage. So, stay with us and enjoy EC3, everybody.
Hello, this is EC3 of TNA Wrestling, and you are so very fortunate because you are watching Beyond the Ring with Big T.
Alright, there you go, guys. You just heard it from the man himself, EC3. So, what I want to do in closing of this before I get into everything, just say once again, rest in peace, Biggins, we're going to miss you. At AIW, but you surely won't be forgotten. And rest in peace. And too bad I didn't get the opportunity, you know, because I know you and John Thorne were busy with your own AIW podcast. Too bad I never got the opportunity to have you on the show, because it would have been nice to have you on to talk about AIW. But just wanted to take this time to let everybody know that might be following the indie scene, and or anybody that knows of AIW. Just wanted to take the time, and even for myself, to just say the entertainment, you know, that you booked and helped book in AIW and things that you've done, definitely great stuff. And I know they're going to continue in your honor. So rest in peace, Mr. Chandler Biggins, real name Chris Bryan. And let's come on into the show here. And I just want to say, everybody, I'm your host, Big T. And first off, if you're watching on YouTube, I'd like you to leave your likes on this video, leave your comments, and subscribe. It's all free to subscribe on YouTube. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes and Podomatic, make sure you like, or make sure you leave a 5-star rating and subscribe to the podcast for free, and it will download to your device of choice all for free. It doesn't cost you anything. And, you know, we're here to break down Money in the Bank, and that's what we're about to do. Sorry for getting a little emotional in the beginning there, but I just, I wanted to pay my respects to Chandler Biggins, someone that I've talked to, you know, over the past couple of years in AIW. But, I'm your host, Big T, and we have, we got our buddy Sage here along with Capital P. The gang's all here.
Yo, 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 what's going on, bro?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Along with what you said, I never knew that Biggins, but rest in peace to him, and also rest in peace to Prodigy of Mobb Deep. If any of you guys listening are fans of hip hop, and particularly East Coast hip hop, New York hip hop, Prodigy was one of the pioneers of the modern, not Harlem, he was from Queens, but the Queens sound, of hip hop and rap. And, he was part of Mobb Deep, which was one of the very influential, rap groups, coming out of New York, and, very, very, innovative guys. And, he passed away earlier today. He was 42 years old. I think he passed away off of sickle cell. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, man, rest in peace to him, and rest in peace to Biggin. And, yeah, man, we've been losing a lot of people in 2017, man, that's for sure.
Yeah, but, you know, about the Prodigy stuff, I've met him a couple times, twice, actually. But he has the same stuff that I have, and I know his struggles personally.
Yeah.
Because I live it, and for him to go out at a 42 scares the fuck out of me, because I know he took it himself.
I think his birthday is also in July.
Yeah,
it's like us, too, so...
So my condolences.
Yeah, know. Man. Anthony knows, P knows exactly what Prodigy went through. And, you know, he passed away from sickle cell, and, you know, my heart goes out to him. And it's funny, because a couple of years ago, I actually had a Twitter war with Prodigy. It was all because of my girlfriend. She said something about him, not in a bad way, and he took it offensive and started like dissing her on Twitter, and I got pissed off, and I'm like, yo, I ain't gonna let nobody talk about my girl like this. So I was like defending her on Twitter, and we actually has exchanged some words. But you know, regardless of what happened, you know, I don't wish death upon anybody, man. You could be my worst enemy, and I would never wish death upon anyone. And
or jail.
you know, bad for jail, never, man. And regardless of our differences that we had back then, you know, he's still a respected veteran and also a father and somebody's brother, somebody's son, you know. And yeah, man, R.I.P. to him, man. R.I.P. to your guy Biggin as well. So.
Yeah, same here, you know, rest in peace, Prodigy as well. We're just losing too much here. We are.
Yeah, we've been losing a lot of people in 2017.
That's the name of the game, so.
Yes, it is.
Enough
with the somber stuff. Let's review Money in the Bank 2017. You were a little bit late with the review.
Sorry about that.
We had our schedules wasn't lining up with each other, so we wasn't able to
accommodate right away.
We wasn't able to get the review up right then and there, but tonight was the best night, and that's why you're getting the review 2 days late, but nonetheless, you're getting a review from us.
Yeah.
So let's get this underway, T.
And like I was explaining to everybody, you know, when I opened this show, I think it's actually going to be better, and we'll actually be able to give more insight as to why they did what they did after seeing what happened on SmackDown tonight.
This is true. This is true.
Very.
So you want to kick us off?
Yeah, man, you guys, you guys can start off with the match card. I'm actually working on inviting myself into the chat right now on my phone.
Go ahead, man. So we kick off the show with the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match. This was history in the making, guys. And
hold on. You skipped the pre-show.
The pre-show.
Oh, yeah, there was a pre-match.
Within the colognes and,
It was the colognes versus Ryder and Mojo?
Yeah, Mojo, yeah. Ryder and Mojo won. Who cares? Sorry about that. Continue.
None of us watched the pre-show, really.
You
guys watch it, but in case you care, the hype bros beat the colognes, which is...
I have one put. One of the colognes is getting really big. He needs to lose weight. It shows that he doesn't care, and I can't blame him.
I just want Zack Ryder to hurry up and turn heel, because we see this coming miles away. Yeah. We know exactly he's gonna turn on Mojo one of these days, and it's gonna be lovely, because I can't stand Mojo.
Right? Yeah, his career needs to die.
And anyways, moving on. Yeah, man, the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match, and we actually kick off the show with this match.
But if I could throw my 2 cents in on the hype bros and the colognes, I actually watched the match.
Okay.
I even catch every pre-show. I'm that fucking hardcore.
Nice. But
just imagine what the match would be like. It's just like your typical tag team match, but I don't mean like tag title match. Like your mid-card to low-tier card tag match. Like that kind of stuff. Not the greatest.
Can't imagine. I mean, just look at the participants involved.
Yeah.
None of them are changing the world or changing the business and anything. So
I mean, you know what? The only thing this did, you know what, between the hype bros and the colognes, only thing it made was my colon hyped up to take a shit.
I mean,
TMI, my friend, TMI.
Yeah, I guess that's what they're known for.
Anyways, so our five participants in this match is Tamina Snuka, Charlotte Flair, Natalia Hart, blank, and Becky Lynch. I mean, well, what did you guys think of this match?
I was so pissed. It's stupid. I hate Vince McMahon. He has the humor of a 6-year-old child from the 1930s. Like, come on. Women go to war, they kill people too. Jeez. This, I don't know, it's stupid, man. The whole Ellsworth, Klein climbing the ladder, grabbing the booty craze, winning the match for her.
Yeah, I mean, the match definitely ended in controversy, which I'm glad was addressed tonight. But on Sunday, it definitely ended in controversy. So basically, says here, okay. The chaos unfolded as everyone brawled. Natalya cleared the ring and had her fingertips on the briefcase before Flair yanked her off the ladder. Other superstars collided into each other as the momentum shifted from wrestler to wrestler. Becky Lynch seemed to be closing in on victory when James Ellsworth pushed her off the ladder. She was actually on top of the ladder, and Ellsworth was down on the bottom on one of the ends of the ladder, and he just fall off and hit her neck on the top rope, and she was out of commission. And then he set the ladder down, and he himself climbed the ladder, unhooked the briefcase, and literally just dropped it into the hands of Carmella, and which prompted the referees to start bickering back and forth with each other on the outside. Then Ellsworth went outside, grabbed the microphone, and literally just announced Carmella the winner, and her music hits, and that was literally the end of the match. So some of the memorable moments and quotes. It says, Carmella climbs over Flair, who was caught up in the ladder, which is pretty cool. Fans obviously chanting, this is awesome. Natalya slams Lynch into the ladder, which looked pretty devastating. Carmella nails Lynch with a Hurricane Rana off the ladder, which is awesome. Flair floors Natalya and Tamina with a corkscrew dive from the top rope, which usually her moonsaults are horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible moonsault, like T says, but this corkscrew moonsault was actually pretty cool from Charlotte, I'm not even gonna lie.
Yep.
And what else is there to say? I mean, we already gave our thoughts about SmackDown earlier. But yeah, definitely the first ever match, Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, is always going to be remembered with fucking Ellsworth is the one who unhooked the
briefcase. Won the match.
And literally won the match for Carmella.
Yeah. It was well done, but poorly executed. The ending sucked. The match was okay. It was a botch fest, I have to admit. And we all knew this going in. But at least nobody killed himself. So with that, I'm okay with it.
What do you think, T?
Hold on here. I'm moving to the front of my garage, at least, so I can feel a nice breeze coming in from under the door. So I open up the door a little bit, but right off the bat, Sage, and trust me, I'm not being biased with this, even though I know it's going to sound it. Because it was the same thing with my buddies, man. They were telling me, they're like, oh, you're just saying this because it's her. You're being biased. And then I rewound it, and I fucking paused it on the direct spot. And they looked at me and they're like, oh shit, I guess you're right. And to what this is Charlotte's fucking corkscrew. It looked cool. The spin was nice, but the execution of the move was fucking crap. Because what did Charlotte do? She landed on her fucking feet again.
Yeah,
in between the women.
Because she's tall as shit, and the women are afraid of freaking actually putting up their hands and grabbing her. And not like the men where they actually catch you. And yeah, she's literally the biggest woman in the match. She's like bigger than Tamina, I think.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, she...
What bothered me is the way they took the ladder shots and the way they was throwing themselves. They did it so safe. I cannot tell you how many times I saw them fall, drop on their legs and hands before they fell.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It's a very safe bump.
And here's another thing that made it even worse, guys. When Charlotte hit the corkscrew, it's not like she even hit. She didn't even make contact with the women that were there. Not like she landed on her feet and then fell right into them. She landed on her feet directly in between the women. And then they all fall back at once without making any contact. And I looked at my buddies. I'm like, you guys are going, oh, that was fucking great. You see what Charlotte just did? Oh, my God. That was so fucking incredible. And then I pause it. And I'm fucking standing up there and I'm yelling. I'm like, well, how fucking incredible is it now? I'm like, look at that shit. Garbage. So that was the number one garbage highlight. Charlotte has a fascination with coming down on her fucking feet. Instead of taking bumps, just let me come down on my fucking feet. She might as well stop going to the top rope. She is a fucking joke. That was terrible. And like P was saying, the ladder bumps in this match, it's like what ladder bumps really? You know, what ladder bumps were they really taking? And, wait a minute, what did those guys get disconnected from here again? Looking to see if Sage and Capital P. Hold on here. I don't see him. Great. I'm gonna have to. I'm gonna go in first. Oh, there he is.
Dude.
What happened?
Take a wild guess.
What, the Wi-Fi went out?
The Wi-Fi isn't out. It's on. The laptop.
Oh, the laptop went to shit again?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense, but whatever. We're gonna make it work regardless. Yeah. The way she goes.
But like I was saying, you know, that was one thing that was garbage for me. Another thing I didn't like, it's like P was saying. What bumps did they really take? They didn't really take any bumps at the ladder. They did it all safe. They had to make sure their hands and their legs got the brunt of the ladder shots. And I'm sorry, please don't call me sexist. Please don't get offended. But women talk about how they want to be on the level of the men. They talk about how they want to main event a WrestleMania one day. How are they going to do that if they can't take bumps like men? How are they going to do that if they can't be true equals to the men? We saw what happened in the men's match. We'll get to that later. Those men were taking bumps left and right. Coming down in those ladders left and right. Kevin Owens even bent a fucking ladder that was so deformed. It couldn't even stand up. And these women did nothing with the ladder bumps. Nothing. You know? I'm surprised Charlotte didn't do a fucking moonsault off the top of the ladder, to be honest with you. No women did nothing off the top of the ladder. They didn't do any jumps off the top of the ladder. it just, the match turned out to what I was afraid that it was going to be. The match turned out to be a ladder match with the ladder just there for the women. It's like the ladder was just there for the women to use, you know, on the fly, however they wanted to use it. But they didn't do anything extreme with it. It's like, all right, let's hit you in the ribs a couple times. Let's push the ladder down on you, and that's it. But here's another thing that WWE fucked up. They felt the need that they had to take this moment away from the women in some way. Instead of letting a woman climb up the ladder and grab the case, they had to have Jane Stealth with a man climb up the ladder, grab the case, and throw it down. But, like we could see transpire on SmackDown early tonight, you know, Daniel Bryan took it away, which is bullshit. He should not have taken Carmella's Money in the Bank away because he read the rule book right on TV. The rule book stated that it didn't matter, you know, who grabbed the case. It matters who is the first woman to possess the case with her hands.
Mm-hmm.
Ellsworth unhooked it. That's all he did. He unhooked the case. He mm-hmm. threw it down. Carmella caught it, and it was in her position. She was the first one to possess that case in her hands immediately. Yep. And the weird thing is, Daniel Bryan basically contradicted himself right on TV. You know, reading the rule book, stating what it is, and after he reads the rule book and what the rule book states, he still took it away from her. He still took it away. After he clearly read the rule book, and from what the WWE rule book states.
The false ass rule book.
Yeah.
We didn't have no rule book back in the golden era in the 80s. How the hell do we have a rule book all of a sudden now?
I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do this when I say rule book. I'm gonna do the quotes. Well, in their quote, rule book, what Daniel Bryan read, Ellsworth did nothing wrong. He just did what he had to do, and Carmella was the first woman to possess the case. But I don't know. For some reason they want to do this again. I hope to God it's not because they feel that they made a wrong move with Carmella and they want to give it to fucking Charlotte. Because I swear to God, I'll have an aneurysm at that point. I'll have a fucking aneurysm. I will stroke the fuck out on live TV next week if Charlotte wins that fucking briefcase. Better not happen. But that's the whole issue here. For me, with what they did with this match, was it good? I guess I could say it was okay to good, but it was not, oh, this is great. This is must see. Honestly, you could watch this event and bypass that fucking match. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's passable, but it's nothing to. I don't think it's deserving to be remembered as the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match. But
is it really?
Yes, it is. But the way I see it, the way logically I would say, maybe they were nervous. You know, it's the first ever match of its kind for them, and you know nobody expected them to outshine the men. We all knew the men were gonna outshine them, but I just think they were very nervous, and they wanted to be safe. They didn't want to take too much risk. They wanted to take, you know, safe bumps and, you know, sort of just rely on, you know, on each other to keep each other safe during the match. But I think they were really nervous, and I think the bar has been set so high because of all the previous matches that, you know, maybe they didn't want, you know, they didn't want to let, like, I think the expectations were too high for them to be able to meet. So I think they went with a regular mediocre match so that maybe next year and the following years, the women can top, you know, top each other. Like, I'm pretty sure next year, Sasha will be in it. Yeah. Bayley will be in it, you know. As again, the crop of women that were in it weren't all that great either, no, you know.
Yeah.
Sasha wasn't in it. Bayley wasn't in it. Alexa wasn't in it. Nia wasn't in it. You know, none of the Raw women. It was just straight SmackDown. And SmackDown's women division right now is pretty weak, if I could say so myself.
Yeah.
And believe me, when I say that this match was passable, I'm talking like barely passable, like by the skin of their fucking ass passable.
Yep.
But anyways, let's move on because we're dwelling way too much on this match.
On a crappy match.
Yeah, on a crappy match. Let's go from a crappy match to an actually pretty damn good match.
Let's do it.
WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championship on the line. The defending, reigning defending champs, the Usos, taking on the re-debuting New Day on SmackDown. This is, I believe, their first ever pay-per-view match.
Since
coming over to SmackDown.
Yep.
And man, it was a pretty good match. Yeah. I have nothing bad to say about this match at all. Basically, Kofi Kingston and Big E beat up on the champs early on. The Usos, though, gained control over sending Kingston tumbling out of the ring. Jimmy and Jey Uso slowed the pace of the match down and pushed Kingston into their corner. They focused on the High Flyer's leg, but he fought back valiantly. Big E overpowered his foes for a stretch. The Usos, however, managed to escape by walking away from the match. The New Day watched on frustrated from the ring. So, basically, the New Day wins via countout. The Usos retain the title. Memorable moments and quotes. Big E hits Jimmy Uso with a massive splash on the ring apron. Kingston takes a nasty spill outside the ring. Big E's
beautiful, not nasty. No,
that's not, that's not it.
Okay.
Big E takes a nasty spill out the ring. Big E suplexes Jimmy Uso out onto the floor. And this is the one you're talking about. Kingston dives out to the floor onto both Usos. Man,
looking beautiful out of my
head. And these guys, they give their little analysis. It says, the two squad had excellent chemistry here. Many of the title bouts elements click. Olympian Kingston generated some solid pathos. The Usos' nasty side and the New Day's heart were on full display. All kinds of convincing near falls added to the drama. It's the ending that will be the focus of many discussions moving forward, though. Clearly, WWE is saving a more decisive finish for later down the road. This was a letdown in the present. And I agree. The match was phenomenal, but that ending just sort of soured. It wasn't a definitive end. Yeah. It was a count out, and you know, of course, it sort of made the Usos look, it didn't make them look weak, just made them look like cowards.
Yeah.
With them tucking the tail between their legs and running away. But other than that, it was a really good match. These two teams have great chemistry, and the reason that they have great chemistry is because they're actually all best friends in real life. I mean, if you watch Up Up Down Down, the Usos, besides Xavier Woods, who's the host of the damn show, so besides Big E and Kofi, the two other guys that you see there the most is always the Usos.
Yeah.
And you can tell they really get along backstage. Yep. They're really good friends, and obviously that translates well onto the screen.
Yes.
You know,
the same
thing with the New Day. The New Day, you know, they're real close in real life. They actually travel together. They actually are on the road together driving, so it shows on screen, and that's a good thing. It's always best when it comes from a natural place, not from a forced place.
Yeah.
And again, like we mentioned, that dive that fucking Kofi took onto the Usos. I mean, it wasn't like a tope suicida, like he hit the ropes and he just shot all through the ropes. No, this man was on the top rope and he just fucking, it was like a trust. And I know a lot of people might fucking have something negative to say, but in my eyes, it was very Christ-like, you know, arms spread out wide and he just sort of like just dove onto them like, you know, kind of like a rock concert, you know, where the fans, where the rock stars jump into the sea of people and the people just hold them up with their hands. And, man, it was really good. And I agree with what they wrote here. Like it was like a taste. It was like a little taste that they gave us. And clearly WWE is saving more for a decisive finish down the road. And I think that decisive finish is going to come at SummerSlam. And my theory is it'll be a multi-man tag match.
Yeah.
It'll most likely be the New Day versus the Usos versus Breezango. Versus, I don't know, maybe the Colognes, the Ascension, I think Mojo and Zach will be split up way before then. I think Mojo and Zach are gonna face each other at SummerSlam. That's what I think. So they'll split up probably by Battleground, they'll split up.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I just hope they built up the Ascension. I doubt it, and it's too late.
Yeah.
But I still would love to see it.
Anyways, T, what was your thoughts on this, Matt?
Well, here's the whole thing, man. The match itself was great. You covered all the important spots in the match. So I don't have to, you know, that trust fall Kofi was awesome. You know, just the action that they gave was great all the way through. But here's the thing. Just because a team is a heel, or even a single stars or heels, you don't have to book them like chicken chickens to have them run out of the match or have them do heel tactics by grabbing the tights or shit like that. I'm even getting tired of that, of hearing people say, oh, good heel tactic, because whatever happened, like heels are supposed to be badasses in a way. That's why they're bad guys. They should be beating people up. Heels should have the right to get a definitive victory once in a while, and I think this would have been a perfect spot. Kofi came back from an ankle injury, right? Why not have the Usos fucking bash apart his ankle? Take advantage. Take out Xavier Woods and Big E. Isolate Kofi. Get the win on Kofi because he can't stand anymore. Then have the New Day work their way back up facing other teams on SmackDown. Maybe face a team at Battleground or earn number one contendership for SummerSlam. Then have the rematch there. Why do you gotta book the Usos, especially as good as they are, like chicken shit heels?
I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from. I agree with you. In WWE's logic, in WWE's mind, all heels, there's one coat of paint for heels.
Yep.
And that's all. They're cowards. They cheat to win. If things don't go their way, they run out. They grab tights. They use weapons.
Have no honor.
That's the way of the heel in WWE. Without, you know, realizing that there's different levels of heel. There's different types of heel. There's, you know, like, for example, a guy like The Miz, I see as the type of heel that would run away. I see as the type of heel that would tuck his tail between his legs and run. Or, like he did on Monday, use Maurice as a shield. His character calls for that type of heel as the cowardly heel. Right?
Exactly.
But then there's the heel like Samoa Joe, who doesn't tuck his tail between his legs, he steps up right to you and fucking headbutts you in the fucking face. You know?
And even like the Usos, they're being built as this rough team that can fight, you know? Like, you know, you hear that song coming up behind you, you know, you're gonna be paranoid, but it's really gonna be.
That's not paranoia, that's the Uso.
Exactly. They're talking how they can fight this, they can fight this big game like no other team can. Cause they're the Usos, right?
Yeah.
But then, they get out of the ring, grab their titles and walk away while the referee is counting. It's not even the fact that they were knocked out on the outside and couldn't answer the 10 count, which they could have did that to make it look better. They actually had to be up on their feet watching the referee count and then walk over like, ah, fuck this. Let's take our titles and get the fuck out of here. And, you know, for a pay-per-view, WWE really has to start thinking differently because I get that the network's only $9.99 a month, but you can't put on finishes like that at pay-per-views just because you're only getting you're getting $9.99 from each subscriber.
But you just answered the question, T. That's the reason why we're getting finishes like this. That's the reason why nothing's definitive. That's the reason why, you know, we don't have to buy the pay-per-view anymore. You just pay $9.99 and you get that month's pay-per-view and everything else.
For
$9.99. So they don't have to try hard anymore. That's why
this is the reason.
That's why the build to these pay-per-views are so poor, because like Anthony just said, they don't have to sell it to you. You already bought it. Because you're paying $9.99 already in the month. And in most cases, you know, people are paying with their debit card, so it automatically gets, the $9.99 gets deducted from your card already. It's not like you have to go out and physically pay money anymore. It just gets taken out of your bank account, out of your bank card. And that's it. They don't have to sell you the pay-per-view anymore. You're already paying for it. And they don't have to try hard anymore. It's there.
Thinking about it, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's why, you know, with no competition, plus you already get what you pay for, they're not trying. But also, I also think is that they're going too fast that they can barely book. Think about it. If they can barely book
two pay-per-views a month.
Yeah, they can barely book one pay-per-view a month. Imagine two. If they can barely book one show, imagine two. With less people, less star power, and less people that they believe deserve the spot. Cause, you know, you could always take Cesaro out of Raw, throw him in SmackDown, and believe me, he could main event.
So, yeah.
Will they? No.
Well, here's the flip side to the coin. Like, yeah, that's definitely the reason. I don't dispute that at all. But why doesn't WWE ever look at the flip side of the coin as, okay, they're doing that because, you know, yeah, the pay-per-view's already bought, but what about the people that pay $500 for a front row ticket and $300 for ringside tickets that aren't front row?
Yeah, that's a fact.
They're paying all this money to go to the show.
Which is not worth it at all.
You pay all this money to sit there, right? And people even travel.
Watch it.
People even travel and pay money to go see the shows. And you're going to stiff those people and give them a half-ass ending just because you chose to only charge $9.99 a month for the WWE Network? It's not right.
I mean, of course it's not right. We know it's wrong, but they're not going to change their ways. They're stuck in their ways. And
See,
I understand 100% what you're saying, but I already know the reasons as to why they're doing that. I already gave them to you. But in terms of this match particularly, I wasn't that mad at the finish. Yeah, it was horrible, but I mean, I agree with what they said in the article. This is just a little teaser for the bigger picture in the long run. And let's face it, when it comes to booking long term, WWE isn't really known for doing any of that shit. So the fact that they actually have a plan to book long term right now, I'm actually appreciative of that, because they don't do it very often. See, New Japan, they book long term. And when I mean long term, I don't just mean 2 months, 3 months. No. They book a year in advance, a year and a half in advance, 6 months in advance. Look at the whole Kenny Omega, Kazuchika Okada thing. That the build up to their Wrestle Kingdom match was from the end of the summer all the way up until Wrestle Kingdom. So it was probably like from July, August, or whatever, or September, all the way up until January, because Wrestle Kingdom is always that first week of January, right?
January 5th of the year.
After that, they didn't have their rematch immediately the following month. Kenny Omega lost at Wrestle Kingdom 11. And what's it now? June?
Yep.
So from January was their first match, and now June was the rematch. How many months is that? That's like 6 months.
Yeah, half a year.
That's half a year. That's 6 months.
Yep.
Just for the rematch alone. Which tells me that if they go for a three-peat, which I believe they will, that probably won't be until the following Wrestle Kingdom this coming January.
Yep.
You get what I mean? Long-term booking. It's not just a one and done or a couple months and that's it. No.
Or they're fighting every month.
Yeah. And
every show.
And that's what I appreciate about New Japan.
But you see right there, they show you that they're putting some importance into that. For them, the booking, it's a big deal. So it makes it feel like a big deal. Because they're not fighting every week. Imagine if you see Kenny and whatever the Chinese person, I'm not even going to bother.
Okada
fighting every Monday, and the pay-per-view itself. Come on.
How much you want to bet that this tag team scenario is going to lead to 8-man tags leading up to Battleground between the New Day and Breezango against the Usos and the fucking Ascension?
Yeah. I'm telling you, that's what it's gonna be in August. I mean, yeah, in August for SummerSlam. SummerSlam, it's gonna be a fatal four-way tag team match.
Yeah, because they're gonna start entangling
Usos versus Breezango versus another team, whatever. Yeah. You can insert anything. Team here,
yeah.
Colognes, Ascension, whatever, anybody.
It'll be the Ascension, because Breezango started their feud with them at Money in the Bank, as we'll talk about later, but.
Yeah, but knowing WWE, you know, that feud could be over next week, and then that's it.
Yep. So.
I am a fan of the Ascension, but the way they've been bugging them for the last 2 years.
No, it's horrible.
And I remember when I really started watching, it was around, like, the last 2 months of them being in NXT. I remember it being really short. And, you know, Sage showed me their matches. And he was like, yo, you gotta watch these guys. These guys are good. And I saw it, and they were really good.
Entertaining.
They were dominated, you know.
All it took for them was them to come up to the main roster.
And they
and as soon as they started getting comparisons to Legion of Doom and Demolition, that's it.
Yeah, it went straight to the crowd.
That's all it did. You know, and it's one thing for us, the fans, to acknowledge it online or whatever.
Yeah.
But as soon as they acknowledge it on screen, that's just
And then I've been losing week to week. And clown, it's one thing for us to clown a talent, but it's another thing for your own announcer, who's supposed to sell me the match or tell me why I should care about these guys.
Now, remember, they had APA destroy them. They had the Boy Jowlaws destroy them.
Everybody.
They had NWO, I think, too, came out and destroyed them. Like, it was like 8 niggas destroying those two guys.
Over and over.
But anyways, enough with that. We dwelled on that shit for way too long. Moving on, we got our SmackDown Women's Championship match with the champion Naomi taking on in-ring re-debuting of Lana. And
hot Lana,
man,
Lana's so hot. Oh my god.
I'll just read to you what they wrote here. It says, an aggressive Lana went right after Naomi.
Aggressive hot Lana.
She flung her around the ring and grounded her with submission holds. The champ kicked Lana into a daze. Hot Lana responded by going after her legs. Carmella strolled in, teasing a cash-in. She instead stood at ringside to distract both wrestlers. That opened the door for Naomi to clamp on a chokehold. Result, Naomi wins via submission. Memorable moments in quotes. Lana twice suplexes Naomi into the ropes. Naomi kicks out Lana's sit-out spinebuster. Quote, my eyes on you. End quote. That was Carmella to Naomi. The analysis says Lana looked pretty impressive considering her vast lack of experience, but she was generally slow and unsure, leading the match to lose energy. Overall, this felt like a middle-of-the-show TV match, not a pay-per-view worthy one. Naomi is going to have to go elsewhere to find an opponent who will inspire her to reach a higher gear. The Carmella cash-in tease was the highlight of the action, setting up the story of a scavenger waiting nearby for her prey to fall over. What do you guys think of this?
Hot, Lana. And Lana was very hot. It was horrible, but she was very, very hot. Come on, did anybody expect anything less? I mean, yeah, she was better than Marie, but I think a turtle could wrestle better than Marie. So, I mean, she was hot, and I give her some props for trying, but I'm sorry, bring back Rusev and have her on the side, and that's it.
What about you, T?
Yeah, I definitely agree with capital P because, you know, Lana, she went out there, she definitely got the look to be in ring. But see, here's the thing with Lana too. Do you ever notice, look at all the other women in the company, in the WWE, even on SmackDown or Raw. Lana doesn't really fit the mold of the women that are around nowadays. She fits the mold of almost like the diva or like, you know, Sable or somebody like that. She does not fit in. She's like the ultimate girly girl mixed in with like these rough, tough women, if you know what I mean. Like for Lana to be tough, I mean, yeah, no doubt she can be tough, but for her to be as tough as the other women, it's going to kind of be hard to sell with her ultimate girly girl look. Do you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't fit with the rest of the women there.
Yeah, but you know what? That's good. That's good. You know why? You want everybody to look the same and wrestle the same? No. I like that. I like that she's a representative of the women of old. Because that only means that's more of a benefit for her because she's going to learn to wrestle how of the women like from now, not the women of old. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's going to learn how to hang with these girls of today who are far way better wrestlers than the women of old. You understand? The only other wrestlers that I could remember that were really good from back then was Lita and Trish. That's it. That's it. Because all the mother girls... Jackie, Victoria, Molly Holly, you know, like, yeah, they were decent.
No,
but the girls of today are way better.
Yeah.
Way better. So for Lana to be a representative of a quote unquote diva, like Sable, Sonny, matter of fact, not even Sonny, cause Sonny's punk ass didn't even wrestle.
Yeah.
But. Yep.
She was a proper valet.
Yeah, she was just a trophy girl. That's all she was.
Yeah. She was Lana.
She was a legit valet. But anyways, you know, kudos to Lana for trying, you know? She came in at WrestleMania 32, had her match then. She was mostly protected because all the other girls did most of the work, but hey, she was a part of it, right? And, we technically haven't seen her wrestle since then, unless you've been at house shows. And in that case, then you've seen her on NXT, but we haven't really seen her wrestle until at Money in the Bank. And yeah, you know what? It was disappointing, but that only leaves for room for improvement, in my opinion. I think she has a lot of upscale. That's the word I was looking for. There's a lot of upside to her, a lot of upscale to her. And I do believe she'll get better in the ring. And you know what? Even in this lackluster of a match, she's still shadowed over Eva Marie.
Yep.
Eva Marie couldn't even get past NXT.
Yep.
You understand?
Well, that was the whole thing too, where I was just gonna go, you know, Eva Marie, no matter when she'd get in there, how much later it was, if it'd be a year later, she would still show the same result, no improvement. From WrestleMania 32 to now, you can tell Lana's definitely getting better. She's responding to training. She's still green though. She still She still needs some work, but she'll get there. This match was not a good match. You know, it wasn't a good match, but like you guys said, kudos to Lana for trying. She did definitely try and put on as good of a show as she could, but here's the twist that comes back to the first match, the Money in the Bank women's match. All right, after the Money in the Bank match, directly after, is when you had Daniel Bryan tweet that he's gonna be on SmackDown to address the issue first thing. So what did Carmella be thinking right off the bat, right there? That, all right, I gotta do something before Daniel Bryan could even address this. I gotta outsmart him. I gotta cash this in and win this title tonight. Cause once she would add the title, what the fuck would they have done that? But, and I thought that's where they were gonna go. She comes out, I'm like, all right, they're gonna make her look smart here. Instead, she doesn't even cash it in, knowing that Daniel Bryan is already going to be down her throat come SmackDown to possibly take the briefcase away, but yet she doesn't cash the fucking thing in. They made her look like an idiot by doing that.
I think you're looking too deep into it. I don't think that meant anything. Again, why rush a cash in? Why rush a cash in? She could have ended up just like Damian Sandow for all she knew. To try to cash in and it'd be a fail. I think she did that to play mind games to Naomi. I think she just did that to show her, like, look, you're vulnerable right now. If I wanted to, I could have cashed in and beat you. But I'm not gonna. That's playing mind games right there. That's getting her off her game. And even then, it didn't take her too far off her game because she still was able to beat Lana. You know? And think of it this way. Had Carmella distracted Naomi enough that it would have caused her to lose the title to Lana, that would have just been easy. That would have just been easy pickings for Carmella, to be honest.
Yeah, but don't you think that Carmella, knowing that Daniel Bryan is going to come to SmackDown, that she should have been thinking, I got to get rid of this briefcase? Like, that's the kind of story they were presenting, and it kind of flew over everybody's head.
No, I didn't see it like that at all. At least I didn't, I don't know. But anyways,
that was the first thing that caught my eye, and I'm like, what a dumb booking decision. It's like she knows general manager's gonna reprimand her, try to reprimand her, but yet she's gonna hold on to that case, knowing that she could damn well lose it, and she did tonight.
Yeah, I don't think she expected that she was gonna lose it. I don't think she expected that. I mean, on tonight's SmackDown, she addressed everything in the beginning of it, and she was 100% right. She didn't say anything that was wrong in the beginning of SmackDown tonight. She said it. She was like, "Yo, there's no rules in a Money in the Bank ladder match. There's no DQ. Anything goes." As long as I get the briefcase, right?
And she could have been...
Everything she said, she was 100% right. You couldn't argue with her.
She could have been so much smarter, too. You know, if you think about it, if she really wanted to cash this in, too. She could have came through the crowd, Naomi could have won. She could have nailed Naomi right in the back of the head with that case, knocked her out cold, handed the case to the ref would have started it. She could have locked in her code of silent submission with Naomi out cold on the ground and got that title.
Bro,
and this would be full controversy.
But you can say that for anybody that's won Money in the Bank before.
No, but this is different. This is different.
You could say that for anybody. Like, oh, because it's so easy to just cash in.
Yeah, but still, this one, you know, especially after the Daniel Bryan tweet, she would have known that they would have had to, you know, make a decision. So,
bro, but the Daniel Bryan tweet, we saw that. We saw that. She didn't see that.
Backstage.
She didn't see that. Backstage. She just had a match. What the hell makes you think she's looking at the screen? No, she just won it. She's probably excited, jumping up and down. Yeah, we fucking won it. Yeah, talking to Ellsworth. She ain't got no time to look at her phone.
For the first 5 minutes. But as soon as she goes backstage.
Dude, they tweeted that immediately after she won it, though.
Exactly. Somebody would have told her. Come on.
All right, but it was too late. She already won it.
No, of course. We're not talking about that, nigga. We're talking about afterwards.
Yeah, she would have won it.
I think y'all looking way too deep into this. Like, y'all really... Do you think the creative team wasted this much time talking about it like we are?
No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But this is the whole point as to where they're stupid. This is where creative's stupid.
But we know this. These are facts. We don't have to sit here and argue about it. This is known throughout the community, throughout the world, that they make the stupidest decisions.
She walks.
New Japan is the premier company in my eyes.
She walks in the back.
They know how to book shit.
She walks in the back right to Gorilla. There's all the TV monitors staring her in the face. You don't think she's gonna see? Oh, here's my general manager that just tweeted. It's like, WWE, they...
What do you mean? He wasn't there. He was at home with his fucking baby.
No, he said the tweet, bro.
You know, he said, there's my general manager.
Yeah, okay.
He was at home with the baby, that fucking... And if anything, his ass should get fucking fired. What are you talking about? He should get reprimanded. Why you took 3 fucking weeks away from your fucking job, huh?
Yep.
Still, don't
let him
do it.
No. Come
yeah,
on, man.
You know they don't think about stuff like
fucking
this.
Fucking Daniel Bryan. Anyways, let's move on from this. We're dwelling way too long on this shit. There's no reason for us to dwell so long on such shit, man. We know they're fucking assholes. We know it is known. Anyways, we got the debut or re-debuting of Maria Kanellis with her husband. The Miracle, Mike Bennett, who is now going by Mike Kanellis. So it says here, Mike and Maria Kanellis surprised the crowd by stepping out onto the entrance ramp. The former Impact Wrestling power couple talked about wanting to teach SmackDown the ways of love. They smooched before departing. Memorable moments in quotes. We are here to educate everyone on SmackDown. The First Lady is here. Analysis. The former Mike Bennett and former WWE talent Maria joining the Blue Brand is a welcome surprise. That surprise element, though, depends on how much one reads up on the industry. This was a long-rumored move, as noticed by Cageside Seats, Sean Reuter. The overly affectionate couple didn't do anything stellar here, but did establish their characters to a degree. They made their intentions clear, and SmackDown has an intriguing alliance to plug in on Tuesday nights. Their music and entrance is corny, but is likely to help them generate some heat along the way. What did you guys think of this debut?
Oh.
Go ahead, T.
I gotta tell you guys. Well, first, let me do my best impression of Bray Wyatt. I'm here. But, no, you know, I was happy to see them.
Ready?
I was happy to see them, but here's the problem. At first I hear this fucking entrance music that sounds like 1980s Van Halen fucking ripoff rock music.
Yeah. First, I thought Teddy Hearts was gonna come out.
Yeah, I didn't know what to think, you know, these hearts everywhere. It even looked like a Van Halen album cover when they had the heart with the guitar going through it or whatever the fuck. And they got this Van Halen type theme with the heart everywhere. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Then they come out. I was happy to see them, but it's like, first I hear Mike Kanellis. Okay, so he's taking her name. I guess Mike Kanellis is Maria's bitch now. Or something. Mike Bennett or whatever you want to call him. And, you know, I just got thinking to myself, all right, let's see where this is going to go. And then I hear Maria open her mouth. In Impact Wrestling, in TNA, and even in Ring of Honor, whenever she would talk, she always sounded good. Comes to WWE, she's fucking, she's like yelling every word real slow. Like, we will show you the power of love. I'm like, Jesus, can you be any more fucking scripted, girl? What the fuck? Like, she sounded almost, not quite, but almost as robotic as fucking Charlotte. I mean, do you need to be so forced to try to get this over? No, just be the Maria that you were in Impact Wrestling. So I was like, man, I was happy to see them, but after I heard the promo, heard the entrance music, seen them kissing, this fucking thing fell flat, man. I hope they pick it up going forward, but this thing fell flat. The whole thing is with this gimmick, could it generate heat? Said yes, but after a while, and I'm talking like 3 to 6 months, after a while seeing this, don't they think fans are already going to say, oh, well, here's these two again. Why don't I get up and go to the bathroom? I don't give a fuck about them. They're just going to do the same shit every time.
Well, I mean, the same can be said about anybody that comes through the WWE doors. At first, everybody's all, oh my God, yo, look, they're here, yeah, yeah. And then after a while, it's like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, the same thing happened to the Dudleys when they debuted in 2015.
Oh, yeah.
They came back, right? I'm surprised, you know, with the Hardys, the novelty still hasn't worn off, but I honestly think that the longer they hold off on the broken mat stuff, I think people are going to start to sour on them as well.
It's going to take a while, though.
Oh, it's going to take a while because there's, dude, they only lost one time.
Yeah, but I wouldn't even categorize them as, like, nostalgia.
They are, though.
Nah, is it, you understand, like, the Hardys has always been on the good side of the fans. They've always explained it. But especially Jeff, you know, Jeff has always been great at his character, his in wrestling, even though, you know, it slowed down a bit, especially with Matt. But Matt's charisma, even though he's not broken officially, you could still see a lot of the gestures, and, you know, even he wrestles the same way. So it's gonna take a while. So
yeah,
I just hope they do it right. It's gonna wear off though. Because it's like when you get a brand new toy when you was a kid. You fucking want to play with it all day, every day. After a while, you're going to get bored of that toy, and you're going to want a new toy. And that's exactly what happened.
I have to say, it happened to the Dudley Boys.
It definitely did. But
look at the way they were booked.
Of course.
I think their booking has a lot more to do than just seeing them night after night.
That's what WWE needs to really...
It's a little bit of everything, but... This isn't about the Dudleys or the Hardys. This is about Mike and Maria. Now, I was never an Impact Wrestling fan. I don't give two fucks about it. Still literally, fun. The only reason that I watched it was because of Matt and Jeff.
Yeah, that really was.
Literally. The only reason that they were even watchable for me. But one person that did stood out to me when I was watching it besides guys like Drew Galloway and Eric Young and Bobby Roode or whatever, was the Miracle Mike Bennett. I don't give a fuck about
Moose. Actually, like,
I don't know. I never liked
him. I'll tell you that. I like Moose a lot more than Bennett.
But the two guys was Eli Drake and Mike Bennett. And I don't know. I like Mike Bennett. He stood out to me. And, of course, he's Maria Kanellis' husband. And Maria Kanellis always been a bad bitch. She's always been sexy as hell. I think this debut fell flat as fuck. But, again, it's too early to call because we haven't – they just cut a promo pretty much. And we didn't see him in ring. We didn't see him do anything inside the squared circle. We just heard him talk. Yeah, a lot of people could say, oh, he's a beta male. Oh, he's a bitch because he has a name or whatever. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter because he's fucking Maria Kanellis and she's hot as fuck. So we could call him a beta male all we want. He's the one who's fucking her.
I wouldn't say all that.
To be honest with you. To be honest with you. That's the way I look at it.
I mean, it depends on if he really cares about him, but whatever.
Dude, they're married, bro.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, I think,
people are looking with
It's because, Impact Wrestling probably owns the right to Bennett, yeah. So he's going with her name instead.
Yep.
Regardless, I don't care about any of that. I don't care about his theme music. I think
she's ugly though.
I think that theme music is there. It's the whole entire gimmick is purposely there. Just like T said, just to generate heat, just to get you talking shit about, oh, I don't like this guy, oh, I don't like their music, oh, they're doing a stupid love gimmick. Whatever. To me, at the end of the day, the gimmick, of course, yeah, it matters, but what he does between the ropes is what matters the most. We haven't seen him wrestle yet, so I think it's too early to call it. But
you hope they booked them good.
I think the debut fell flat.
Now, man, I can call it right now. It's gonna suck.
Let's see what happens.
I think it's gonna end up falling flat too, P. I really do. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope they treat them the way they should be treated and treat them well. But it's WWE we're talking about.
Yeah, don't ever forget it. They fuck everything up that we like. Everything. Anyways, moving on, we have the WWE World Heavyweight Championship match. The champion, Jinder Mahal, taking on Randy Orton. It says here, Greg Gagne, Larry Henning, Sergeant Slaughter, and they forgot to mention Ric Flair were among the legends who sat in the front row to take in this match. Jinder Mahal egged on the crowd before going into battle. He found himself eating forearms after the opening bell rang. Randy Orton walloped him with a methodical offense. The Viper, though, tweaked his knee in a spill outside the ring. Mahal pounced on the weak point in a hurry. Mahal used a number of moves the legend made famous. He kept Orton reeling. He dismantled the challenger. Interference from the Singh brothers derailed Orton's comeback. When they put their hands on Bob Orton, his son came to the rescue. The Viper throttled both cronies. Mahal attacked him afterwards, hitting the Colossus for the 3 count. Mahal wins via pinfall to retain the championship. It says here, analysis. From the vignettes building him up to his entrance, the bells and whistles of the Mahal package have been excellent. Building on a great atmosphere, Orton and Mahal told the classic story as babyface against heel, resilient hero against vicious villain. Mahal works a slow throwback style that will certainly turn off some folks. This was his best and most complete match to date, however. The match did well to make use of its many moving parts. From the legends at ringside to the Singh brothers, Mahal is still unpolished, but he made a statement here that he indeed belongs as WWE champ. Now, I wouldn't say all that, but that's Bleacher Report's analysis. I'm not going to read the fucking, the memorable quotes or whatever. Anyways, what do you guys think of this?
The match was okay. Not big on Randy Orton as of late. So whatever.
Late.
Yeah. I I mean, for a long time. Gender, I am, because, I mean, not really at the same time yet. I'm 50-50. I like that they're pushing somebody new, a fresh face, a heel. It's just too quick without building him. He still has Jobber written all over his face. And that's my problem.
How about you, T? What do you think?
Oh, God, this match. It didn't feel like a championship match at all to me. This was, don't get me wrong, I'm not a fan of Orton either. I'm not a fan of either guy. These are two guys, honestly, I could give a fuck about. And, you know, regardless of how I feel about either man, I have to do this objectively. And whole thing here with this match, Jinder Mahal trying to do the moves that he did, you know, it really exposed him, in my mind. It really exposed him on his in-ring inabilities. That this guy, his moveset, everything he tries to do, he just sucks. He really does. He flat out fucking sucks in the ring. You know, there's nothing to him at all. And they made Randy Orton look like a complete fucking fool. A complete fool. Okay? Here's the problem. Now, you're telling me, now yeah, I'm gonna think into it, and I'm gonna pick it apart, as crazy as it might be. You're telling me at the end, when Orton hits the RKO, the referee sees the Singh brothers put fucking Jinder Mahal's foot on the rope. Ref was getting ready to disqualify him. Randy Orton is like fucking almost bargaining with the referee not to do it. So then the referee throws the Singh brothers out. All right, number one here. Who in the fuck in the WWE, not named Randy Orton, John Cena, any of the type guys, nobody can bargain with the fucking referee on if he's going to call a disqualification or not. So what makes Randy Orton so fucking special that he can bargain his way to having the ref throw the Singh brothers out? That's number one. Then the refs throw the Singh brothers out. So then what do they do? Like usually when people won't leave the ringside area, what do? They have security and referees usually come out to haul the people away. They didn't do that this time. They have the fucking Singh brothers go up to Cowboy Bob Orton, grab him by the suit jacket. One's fucking holding a fist right up to Orton, Bob Orton's face for how long? 10 seconds? Randy Orton fucked up here on his timing. They're just fucking sitting there holding the fist up to Bob Orton's face like, my God, you could have fucking jacked this guy 5 times already in the face if you wanted to. By the time Orton got down there. Then he gets down there, neutralizes the situation and knocks them down, right? Once you knock the Singh brothers down, logically, this is a WWE championship match. You knock them down. Wouldn't you get back in the ring and take advantage of Jinder Mahal, who's fucking down after your RKO, to try to capitalize and win the WWE Championship and let security and the referees come and pick up the Singh brothers and haul them off? No, that's not how WWE books it. What they fucking do is have Randy Orton do a complete fucking repeat of Backlash. Beat up the Singh brothers, the fucking referee, if you go back and watch it, the fucking referee, Mike Chioda, pulled the cables out of the fucking announcer's table so Orton can give one of the Singh brothers an RKO through it. Did you guys see that shit? I'm like, oh, the referee's fucking helping the challenger and beating up the Singh brothers. Wow, this is great. But here's another thing that made Randy Orton look stupid. In the middle of all this, he's messing with this for what, 2-3 minutes, maybe longer, beating them up? First of all, his main objective is to win back the title, right? Instead, he completely abandons that objective to fucking beat up the Singh brothers? Instead of focusing on your fucking task at hand, you're just gonna totally abandon that. Meanwhile, Jinder Mahal's in the fucking ring, taking a cat nap, just waiting to see when Randy Orton gets back in, and then finally he's done beating on the Singh brothers, then he gets back in, alright, I'm gonna try to hit another RKO. Hits him with the fucking Kalas, whatever the fuck his move is. It's not even a powerful finisher, okay? Number one, Orton really wasn't, Orton took no damage at that point in about 5 minutes. And he takes his first move in about a 5 minute period. Don't you think Orton should have kicked out? No. Orton gets pinned. He completely abandons the objective of trying to become the WWE champion and turns his attention to the Singh brothers. They made him look like a complete fucking idiot, and Jinder just looked as bad as ever. This whole thing, and the whole repeat of Backlash. You know what? I saw this at Backlash. Why the fuck do we need to relive it at Money in the Bank? The same back suplex on the table, the same RKO through one table, the same RKO on the floor. Why? For what? For what? What is the fucking reason to do that again?
Over and over again.
I mean, that match, for Money in the Bank, alright, if this was like a B-level pay-per-view, like say if this was Great Balls of Fire, I'd be like, well, this is Great Balls of Fire. What
at this point, Great Balls of Fire is looking way better than Money in the Bank right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's looking like they're taking Great Balls of Fire way more serious than they did Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
And Money in the Bank was a giant letdown, and Great Balls of Fire right now, I mean, they got Brock versus fucking Joe. That alone is shitting on Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keep in mind, this is your type of
that Universal Championship, a championship that should be secondary to the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And that match is going to completely blow out whatever we saw between Jinder and Randy out the fucking water.
Oh, yeah. And Mahal wins, okay? Now rumors are running rampant everywhere. We could talk about it in the news and rumors, but I want to tell everybody offhand because it ties in with this. They said Battleground is going to be the return of the Punjabi prison match with Orton and Jinder to close out the rivalry. And then Jinder's going to move on to
see. We'll cover that on news and rumors. Let's not talk about that now.
And from what we've seen on SmackDown tonight, with Randy Orton attacking Jinder, I'm sure it's going that way, but this is all gonna be for nothing, it's gonna be meaningless, just like this match was. I can't believe they made Randy Orton look the way that they made him look. I was in shock at how badly they booked this, at how badly they booked it. Unfucking real. For Money in the Bank, which is looked at as possibly an A-level pay-per-view, like part of a Big Five, and this was the title match that they dished out in the end. Fucking embarrassment. Embarrassment. I know it may not be the popular thing to say, but come on. Look at all that. Look at what I said with the bartering with the referee and Randy Orton abandoning task at hand. In doing what he did.
Can I go now?
Yep.
I mean, honestly, I don't know why you're surprised. Yeah. It's fucking Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal. They both fucking suck dick. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know Jinder Mahal, there's only one reason why he's champ, and it's not because he earned it.
Yep.
It's not because he deserves it.
It's because he's been.
The only reason that he's a champion is because Vince McMahon wants to expand into fucking India. That's it. This is all a ploy. This is all political. There's all political reasons as to why this man has the belt. He wants to expand into that territory. He wants those 1.3 billion people over there to buy the network and to buy all the merchandise and all of that stuff. That's the only reason that he wants to get into it. It's a lot of untapped potential revenue over there. That's it. It's all political. That's the only reason. Not because of his in-ring skills. Not because this man is a great worker or any of that. Nah, he's far from it. He's not green, but he's not very seasoned at either.
Yeah.
His moveset is very mediocre. I mean, but one thing I will say about him, I mean, obviously he has a great look to him because he's been juicing with Batista and Lesnar and stuff.
Yeah.
But, in the last 2 to 3 months that Jinder has jumped over to SmackDown, his character has been way more fleshed out in those 3 months than the 10 years that Randy Orton has been in that company. Could you believe that? Could you believe that? And that's one thing that you failed to mention. At least his character is fleshed out. At least this man has motivations. At least he has reasons as to why he does what he does and says what he says. And he says it straight up. The anti-American gimmick, he was doing that at least the first few weeks. But if you notice, they toned that down a lot with him. He's not really doing the anti-American gimmick anymore. He's doing the pro-his-country gimmick. Not the anti-American, oh, you stupid American, this man. No, he's just being pro-India. And that's one thing that I like. It's a different take on a anti-American character, which I appreciate that a little bit more. But regardless, in terms of in-ring, he's trash.
But the reason... Now,
again, Randy Orton, what's there to say about him? Everything that he's done, we've seen before. Everything that he says, he said before. Everything about him is same old shit. The same thing when Cena fucking starts wrestling and people see him, everybody starts chanting same old shit. Well, the same can be said with Randy Orton. It's the same old shit each and every time. He's fucking boring. He's fucking stale. And when he comes on, I legit want to go to the bathroom. I legit want to fucking take a shit. I want to take a bathroom break.
One is a jobber and one is an overpaid jobber.
Like,
the reason why I'm so upset.
I don't see why Randy Orton gets the paycheck that he gets. He doesn't prove it to me.
No.
He has everything he has because of his dad that was in the front row. And you said it. It's the same fucking match from fucking Backlash. It's the same rehash bullshit. No. Same rehash bullshit. But anyways, I wasn't expecting this match to be anything, and it really wasn't.
No.
It was a big letdown, as expected, because of the two people involved.
No.
As I said before, I want fucking Rusev to debut again, and I want him to fucking kick ass. And I would love it if you were to take that title off.
Please hurry, Rusev. Wherever you are, please hurry.
Save us, Rusev.
Save us.
Remember how they used to say, save us, Jericho? Save us, Rusev, man.
Save
us. Rusev is going to come. He's going to receive the biggest babyface pop ever in his career when he comes back. You mark my fucking words.
I'm so upset.
You mark my words. He's going to come back a babyface.
He will.
Babyface style, babyface.
Even if they book him as a heel, the reaction he's going to get is going to be face.
The reason why I'm so upset is that this is at Money in the Bank. It's not like your typical B-level pay-per-view. And they completely took a shit on everything.
Well, no. Just because people have been saying that, oh, Money in the Bank, it should be looked at as one of the big five, not the big four. Yeah. Well, no, it's clearly B level, and they did that to show you, hey, this is B level. And not only that, but again, back then, Money in the Bank wasn't. It was three Raw guys versus three SmackDown guys.
Yeah.
Or SmackDown would have their Money in the Bank, Raw would have their. It was dual brand. Now it's just SmackDown. Maybe that's the reason why it took a big ass hit and it wasn't as good as it usually is. Who knows?
Yeah.
But the point is, they dropped the fucking ball. They dropped the ball big time at Money in the Bank. And I think people's expectations was way too high. Why? I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe because we're wrestling fans and we're used to being overly hyped for a fucking pay-per-view.
Hoping and praying.
And in the back of our minds, we know that it's gonna fucking suck ass regardless. And that seems to happen to us way too often. But you know what? That's our fault for getting our hopes up. Because at the end of the day, it's WWE. And WWE always lets down their fans. Always lets down their fans. And honestly, this match sucks. And I don't want to keep talking about it. I don't. What was the purpose of the legends being in the front row? There was absolutely no purpose there. They add nothing to the match. No. Oh, he's attacking your dad? Like you said earlier, T, keep your eye on the fucking prize, bro. This is a world title match. This isn't a fucking title, a tag team match. This isn't an intercontinental title. 15, this isn't a United 16. States. This isn't a United States championship, man. He would have been a 14-time champion had he fucking won.
That's why he didn't care.
Yeah.
He would have been a 14-time champ, but you know what?
He knows Cena's the one that's going to overdo the right.
But he didn't care because clearly, oh, you're attacking my dad, so I got to go.
Yeah. I got to lose the match.
And again, the ref logic. Again, the ref logic fucked up earlier with the woman in, with the woman's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Wow.
And the ref logic fucked it up again for the Randy Orton match.
Yeah.
I mean,
what a coincidence.
I mean, if you see this man coming out with his two goons, and history will tell you, hey, his goons always gets involved in the match. Wait, how about you fucking ban them from the fucking ringside?
Yeah.
I mean, if you really want to speak logic, clearly you see that they get involved in every match. Every Tuesday night, they get involved. Every pay-per-view.
But that's where the Punjabi stuff makes sense.
But the Punjabi prison?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why I believe it.
Yeah, I can see it happening, but I'm saying,
I don't want it.
No, but I'm saying logic will tell you, like, you being the ref, clearly you work at the company. You see that these motherfuckers get involved in every match. You can be like, hey, you know what? No, you're banned from ringside. You know? Or Randy should have made it that stipulation. Hey, I want to ban them from ringside. I don't want them to get involved in my match.
Well,
anyways, but it was absolutely horrible. I could give two shits about either of these guys. But at this point in the game, I care more about Jinder Mahal than I ever did Randy Orton.
Yeah.
Randy Orton is an overpaid, overhyped piece of fucking garbage.
Overpaid job.
And as much as you hate Charlotte, you know what? In the 3 or 4 years that she's been in that company, I've seen her improvements in the ring. I've seen her improvements in the mic game. I've seen her become Charlotte Flair.
Not even that. I've Randy seen her Orton, entertain us.
Randy Orton, since he debuted, he's been the same exact douchebag. The only thing that's changed, oh, he has more tattoos.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's a fucking snake. Okay. He legit does nothing for me. I see him and I legit start yawning, bro. He's yawn-inducing, bro.
Yeah. I think of him, I think of Cena.
He's yawn. No, I prefer Cena over Orton, bro. I prefer Cena. At least when Cena starts talking, I don't start yawning. I actually pay attention to what he says. I dislike him, but you know what? He's entertaining. He's entertaining. He gets me fired up. He sucks in the ring. You know, he sucks in the ring, but his matches feel important.
Yeah.
Cena's actually gotten better.
His matches feel like a bathroom break.
Yep.
Cena's actually gotten way better in the ring over the years. Way better. It all started. Cena got way better in the ring over the years, and it all started with the U.S. Open Challenge. He started reinventing himself and actually pulling out more moves in his arsenal to hang with guys like, Who would ever thought, even though AJ
Neville.
Yeah, and AJ Styles, did he carry the matches with Cena? Yes, but who would have thought Cena could pull out some
Cena
moves?
Held his own. Cena held his own.
He did carry. No.
Come on, man. Cena knows what he's doing, bro.
Like,
knows what he's doing. It's not like it's not like Cena's not experienced. Carrying the match is when you're experienced. Like, for example, when it was AJ Styles versus fucking Ellsworth or whatever, and fucking Ellsworth fucking tucked his head when he shouldn't have tucked his head for the Styles Clash, and fucking AJ mid-air twisted his body so that Ellsworth doesn't fucking get paralyzed. That's carrying. That's saving the match. He carried it right there. Otherwise, Ellsworth would have been in the fucking wheelchair. That's carrying. Cena held his own. Cena knew what he was doing. Regardless of how we feel about Cena, come on, man. You gotta call it down the middle, and you gotta give respect where respect's due. And I respect John Cena. I don't like him, but hey, I could respect him putting on a good match. Mm-hmm. Randy Orton? Fuck Randy Orton, man.
Pick up Quack on the dub.
Honestly, man, fuck Randy Orton. He does nothing for me, man.
Yeah, like Orton, here's the thing. Orton has never reinvented himself. Showed anything new to his repertoire ever. Cena basically has a whole new move set. He doesn't have the five moves of Doom anymore. He has like a whole new move set that can hang.
Yeah, I give Cena way too much props.
When compared to Orton?
Because he come out with one move. Right,
when compared to Orton, bro.
Yeah. That's a very low bar.
What do you mean it's a low bar? They've been feuding since they both started.
Yeah, low bar.
Dude, they're like Goku versus Vegeta. Well, you know what I mean? They're always facing against each other. But anyways, let's just move on from this crap, man. Let's just move on. I just want to know why was the Legends out there? All of them. But what was so important about St. Louis that they all had to be there? Oh, they all used to be in the same territory. Who gives a flying fuck?
Because they
was down like every territory besides WWE.
They want to treat St. Louis like it's this historic wrestling town, which it is, but when you're not...
How about they come over here to New York, to Madison Square Garden, huh? How about they put on a fucking show here, a pay-per-view here? No, they only want to do fucking live events, non-televised events. Get the fuck out of here, bro. You want historic? We're historic here. This is where fucking Hogan beat the Iron fucking Sheik for his first fucking title. That it fucking blew the roof off the motherfucker.
Don't know why.
Huh? This is the fucking arena where fucking that fucking punk ass Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. The match that sucked at WrestleMania 20. But hey, it fucking happened. This is where fucking Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon went crazy in that first ever ladder match that they had.
Where?
WrestleMania 10. Come on, man.
Triple H and Mankind.
It's fucking
Rumble.
New York is WWE's hometown and them motherfuckers never come. Or so they go to Brooklyn, which is still New York. Yeah, cool. But they showing Brooklyn mad love. They ain't showing Manhattan no love. Come on, man. The thing is that they barely ever come here, and they do all these big things outside of New York. But when it comes to New York, they don't do nothing for us. Are you kidding me? At least in fucking Japan. They realize Tokyo, yeah, that's our big city. That's where we got our shit popping at. And we're gonna have the Tokyo Dome. We're gonna have Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome every fucking year. Every fucking January. And you know what? That's exactly what they do. Come on, man. Anyways, let's fucking move on, cause Randy wanted to piss off.
Became super.
Anyways. So we had an impromptu tag team match, a match that was not promoted. It sort of just happened on the fly. It wasn't on the card. We had Breezango taking on the Ascension. So it says, before the bout, yo, Todd, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, so it says, before the bout, Breezango delivered another Fashion File segment. This time, the duo parodied the old Fuji Vice bits. A mystery team announced it was the one that trashed Tyler Breeze and Fandango's office, challenging the Fashion Police to the match. In the ring, Breeze and Fandango held their own in a slugfest until Connor took control of Prince Chris. The Ascension then slowed the pace to a crawl. It tried to isolate Breeze, but Fandango went on a flurry to even things up. A roll-up ended things in the babyface's favor. Result, Breezango wins via pinfall. Memorable moments and goal, Breezango and Fandango rattle off the titles of 80 songs as lines in their conversations. Analysis. Breezango's comedy segment didn't lead to the most powerful review, but it was a fun change of pace for the pay-per-view. Seeing the Ascension do anything at all is refreshing too. The match itself was nothing memorable. It felt like the filler that it was. The Ascension has no momentum, so beating that lowly squad has little weight. Hopefully WWE finds new cases for Breezango to take on. This one ended with an underwhelming climax, but was mighty entertaining leading up to that point. You guys want to give thoughts on this or no?
Nope.
You
know, just the way they started to build this thing, it's like, oh, we trashed your office. And I even knew when they showed like the outlining of the shadows of who did it. I'm like, watch, this is gonna be the fucking Ascension.
Right, that's exactly what I told Pete. Yeah. I was like, how much you wanna bet is the Ascension?
First thing. And as far as the match itself goes, I can tell you what the match was. Here, just listen.
It was obsolete.
Yo, T, you see how I told you that being a Bray Wyatt fan is fucking painful, depressing?
What was that?
I said, you see how I told you that being a Bray Wyatt fan is painful and depressing?
Yep.
And it's even more painful and even more depressing. It's wrist slitting inducing.
Yeah.
Being an Ascension fan, bro. Yes. Because
and like, I would say I'm a fan.
Like P said, man, I've been a fucking Ascension fan since I started watching NXT, man. I saw these two guys. I'm like, yo, who the fuck are these guys? They had before Tozawa came in, they're the ones who had the yeah. They had that shit. Well, Tozawa had the ha, huh, but yeah. They had the yeah. And oh my god, bro. These guys, I used to see them, I'm like, yo, they're fucking badasses, bro. And then I love their theme. I still love their theme song. Love their theme song when they come out. You know, they will fucking do the thing where they crawl and then they fucking rise and shit in the camera.
Yeah.
And then they have the t-shirts with the pyramid and all. See, and I like all that symbolism, Illuminati bullshit. I love it, man. I love their whole, you know, the package that is the Ascension. I even like the fucking name, you know, and Connor and Victor. And this is before they came to Raw, so they wasn't wearing the stupid fucking makeup, you know. They didn't have to wear any of that shit, and they were fucking intimidating. As soon as they came up to the fucking main roster, man, they had to start wearing fucking makeup and all this bullshit. Fucking destroyed their package. The same thing goes with Tyler Breeze, bro. I was a huge Tyler Breeze fan back in NXT, man. I was huge on Tyler Breeze. I love Prince Pretty, man. He was putting on some crazy, phenomenal matches in NXT, man. And entertaining the fuck out of us, bro. And as soon as he came up to fucking SmackDown, what they did? He had that little feud with Ziggler, and after that, what happened?
Nothing.
Just like you did just now, flushing down the toilet, bro.
Crap. Absolute crap. That's all the good I've done.
Like, honestly,
I think you're sexy enough to be a top, you know, contender. He's just gonna drag you through the mud and not give a crap. Sell you out to any guy he thinks looks way better than you, quote unquote Roman Reigns.
Anyways,
here's something fun in the chat. Lisa put, fuck Charlotte, Cena is alright, and raise some hell and get them to New York.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, I don't want to talk about that match. It was what it was.
It was a
filler match.
It was my reaction, what I gave to it. It was a flush down the toilet.
Yeah, yeah, that's all it was. I mean, yeah, it was exactly what it was. It was a filler match. You know, they wanted to give you some little breathing room between the title match, the world title match, and the main event, which we finally have reached, which is the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. So we had Dolph Ziggler versus Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura versus Baron Corbin. And, as soon as Nakamura was making his way to the ring, all the rest of the competitors were there. He was blindsided by Baron Corbin right before the match even began. And Corbin destroyed Nakamura right there on the entranceway, so much so that Nakamura had to be carried away to the back by the refs and the medics or whatever. And Corbin made his way to the ring, and they all started brawling. So here it says, Owens and Zayn brawled outside the ring. Corbin went after everyone. Chaos marked the bout as Owens attacked Styles and Corbin took down Ziggler. Soon, Zayn, Styles, Corbin, and Ziggler all looked to be moments away from winning, but their foes got in their way each time. Corbin cleared the ring and was on his way to victory, but Nakamura returned. This is like, I'd say like 25 to 30 minutes into the match already, I think.
Yeah.
Or something like that, or 15, 20 minutes into the match, and then Nakamura came back out. Nakamura returned. The King of Strong Style whipped him. He and Styles had a face-off at the base of the ladder that set the crowd on fire. Oh, God, can't wait to talk about that. The Lone Wolf eventually pushed his opponents aside to claim the briefcase. Result, Corbin wins via retrieving the briefcase. Memorable moments and quotes. Corbin lays out Nakamura with a video camera. Corbin and Ziggler team up to crack a ladder against Styles' body. We have a war of attrition already. This is JBL. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. Zayn throws Owens from the top rope onto the ladder. Oh, man, that was vicious. Ziggler climbs atop Corbin to reach the briefcase. Zayn hits Ziggler with a powerbomb off the top of the ladder. Oh, my God, that sunset flip powerbomb spot. Jesus, it was beautiful. It was fucking cringe inducing because you didn't want nothing to happen to him, but it was beautiful, man. It was so nice. Beautiful.
Much respect to those guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. All the guys except Corbin. Fuck you, Corbin.
Yeah.
Style uses the phenomenal forearm to knock Zayn off the ladder. That was really great.
Yep.
Styles slams Owens onto the ladder from the ring apron. Oof. With that AA, oh my sweet baby Jesus.
Like I said, Styles hold the match. Styles and Kevin.
How is Kevin Owens not broken in half? That was JPL. Styles is left hanging by the wire that holds him. Oh, God, I don't even want to talk about that spot. They gave it an A+. Analysis. It says, this was everything a Money in the Bank should be. Electric, flush with car crash-like moments. A star-making stage. In many ways, Corbin was the centerpiece here. He played the destroyer for much of the match. Owens and Zayn's rivalry added an electricity to the bout. Each man took unbelievable risks. Nasty, dangerous spots provided highlight after highlight. WWE's used Nakamura extremely well, making sure to showcase him near the climax. His return was a huge moment, and his showdown with Styles was a mini dream match. A mini? The company now has a number of intriguing paths to take as well, including Nakamura feuding with Corbin or Zayn and Styles having issues. Oh, man.
Of course, they're not going to go along the way.
Anyways, yeah, you could charge that back, bro.
That was beautiful. That was so beautiful.
I'll let you guys speak first, please.
Let me go first, please. Like I said, you know, like you said, we suck off AJ, but dude, it's for a reason, man. And that match is a reason. You know, I'll be the first nigga to say, when it comes to AJ and TNA, I don't know nothing.
when it comes to TNA, all I know was Broken, the Broken Universe. Anything other than that, I did not watch. I did not care. I did not want to care. It sucked. All I watch is WWE, Ring of Honor, and now New Japan. So AJ Styles is held the match. Him and Owens was great. The whole Nakamura stuff was beautiful. Even though I wish to see a little more, but it was good enough that, you know, it kept. It was good. It was beautiful. Corbin, I hate that guy. I really was hoping it wouldn't have been somebody like Sami Zayn. Because Sami Zayn needs something to push him there.
Absolutely.
And I think the Money in the Bank would have been perfect for it.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
The fuck do I know?
See?
Well, I'm going to tell you guys straight up, you know, the way it should be is, you know, the match was good, but honestly, don't let this overshadow your rating for the whole event when we have to judge this event as a whole.
Yeah.
And judging for what it is. Now, this match was good, but, you know, I want to put this in a way where I'm saying it right. So I'm thinking, you know, to collect myself here. You know, the whole thing with taking Nakamura out at the beginning of the match, you know, from his return, I think the way he returned and that whole thing he had with AJ Styles, I think that was the right thing to do. They booked that right. But yeah, Corbin taking Nakamura out, you know, throughout this match before Shinsuke made his return to the match. You had Owens take a spot where a ladder got bent completely, and I don't even know why the fuck. At one point, Sami Zayn tried to set that fucking ladder up to see if it would stand and try to climb it. It's like, dude, get another ladder. It's toast. I mean, Owens bent the fuck out of that ladder. AJ with the beautiful springboard, phenomenal form. I forgot who he hit off the ladder with that Zane. Springboard.
Sami Zayn.
Zayn, okay. Yeah, that was a beautiful spot. I mean, it definitely had good spots. It was what a Money in the Bank match should be. But with this crop of talent, look at how much talent that was in this match.
Mm-hmm. Don't you? Everybody besides Corbin.
Yeah.
Everybody in this match besides Corbin, even Ziggler was good, man. All these guys should be world champions. All of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Besides Corbin. Fuck Corbin.
But
we all know Corbin is gonna be the next one to be the world champion.
Here's the big picture. You have all this talent, which is one of the most talented Money in the Bank matches of all time. Now it was good, don't get me wrong, but with this talent alone, shouldn't it have been a lot better than what it was? I really think it should have.
I think the fact that Nakamura was out for most of the match was what hurt it. I mean,
people essentially, were expecting a lot more.
Essentially, it was a 5-man match instead of a 6-man match like it was built. It was essentially a 5-man match. Five man for themselves instead of 6. But again, looking back, the fact that Nakamura was taken out early, at first, obviously, I was really pissed off, but based on what I said earlier, I still stand by it. Nakamura should be more of a novelty, more of a special attraction. Do not overuse him. Do not overuse him. Don't overexpose him. You overexpose him, he's going to become just like everybody else on the roster, just another body, just another face. And I don't want that for Nakamura. Nakamura is a top-tier talent. Takamichi Noko. He is no Funaki. He is no Tajiri.
But if there was anywhere to have him show his thing, it should be out of pay-per-view.
So for them not using
him for a long time, you know, it rubs me the wrong way. But then at the same time, I do understand.
I understand. Because, see, okay, the only other thing that I can compare this to is last year's Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Remember last year's Royal Rumble when Roman Reigns had to defend the title, and towards the middle of the match they went and the League of Nations.
Why would you even bring that
kicked
up?
His ass? No, because they kicked his ass and they took him out of half the match. Right? They took him out of half the match, and right towards the end, he comes back and he starts cleaning house.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, the reason why you can compare that is because of the ending. He cleaned house.
He cleaned house, yeah.
After being the first man in the match.
Yeah.
Doing his thing for like 10 minutes. Being taken out. Beating the crap out of him. Missing for 15. And then coming back. Beat everybody and threw everybody out.
Yeah, but he didn't win the match.
Yeah.
He didn't win the match. But the difference here is Reigns, and he said it on Monday. Nobody could beat me in singles competition. Nobody could beat me in singles competition. Clearly that wasn't a singles match. That was a fucking Royal Rumble match. But he's 100% right. He came in, he got his ass whooped, they took him out, and then they brought him back out. I was pissed off because I felt like with him, he should have been in the hospital. He should not have been in the match anyways. He should not have came back to the match. And I'm talking about Roman Reigns here.
Yep.
Yeah, he comes back, and of course, he's fucking Superman. He just got recharged, right? He had a nice little 30-minute power nap, and then that nigga came back, and he's Super Saiyan again, right? Nakamura came back, and he was still beat up. He wasn't hurt. Roman was back 100%, especially with the fact that he had a Kevlar vest. Everybody overlooks the fact that this nigga wears a Kevlar vest. He had a Kevlar vest to protect his body, so he didn't take that much damage when he went through the table.
Exactly.
Nakamura was still limping. He was still hurt. When he came out, you saw him holding his shit, and he wrestled like he was still hurt. He sold his injuries. But regardless of the fact, even though he was only in the match for a couple minutes, he was still the fucking star of the show, in my opinion. Because as soon as he came out, the fans lost their fucking minds. Especially with that stare down that him and AJ had, and oh my god.
And they were going at it blow for blow. It was just fucking believable to have that.
I fucking love Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss is, I can have fucking wet dreams over that girl. But not even Alexa Bliss got my dick as hard as when I saw these two facing off against each other in a WWE ring.
Wow. That's a big
skin. That fucking God, I felt the blood rush down to my pants. And I'm not gay, man, but fuck, man, it gave me a fucking boner, bro. I was like, yes, I want to see this. 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 And they just gave us that little tease. It's that. It's like, man. It's like when you're on a fucking diet and then you get that one day where you get to cheat. Oh my God. And you take a fucking bite of like a fucking bacon sandwich and then they fucking snatch it away from you. That's how it is. That's how I felt. Like I'm on a diet and then there's the one day, oh my God, I'm eating a bacon sandwich today. And they just give me a little snippet and take it away from me. Like, fuck. Don't tease me.
But the match itself, when you really pick it apart and you think of Money in the Bank matches from the past, I honestly don't think this one cracked the top five of all time. It really,
this should have been in the top 10,
maybe in the top 10 and
not because
of it was a good match, but just because of the star power that was in the match, the level of talent that the match, yeah, but
the whole thing again, is that this should have been top three.
That's why I don't think it was such a great match, because our expectations were way too high. It was way too high, and they let us down. That's why I think a lot of people were sour on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, because really it should have been a top three, if not maybe the best Money in the Bank with the crop of talent. And they didn't put it together, but they did give us that phenomenal ending. In the end, Baron Corbin got the case like we all predicted he would. But here's the thing. This is what I see now in WWE's future. If they're going to book smart, watch everything I say they're not going to do, but they should do, especially with trying to make WrestleMania 34 the biggest ever because it's on New Orleans' tricentennial birthday, and I know they're going to try to make it big. What they should do, finish off Jinder and Randy, SummerSlam, Cena, Jinder, Cena wins, and then have them hold it for maybe a month or two, then you get to the fall, right? And then you have Corbin cash in on Cena, win the title. It puts Corbin over big because he's beating the 17-time champ. You have him beat Cena. Then, like, yeah, it's probably Royal Rumble, I would say. Have Corbin maybe hold it from, like, Survivor Series through Rumble. Have Corbin face AJ Styles. Styles beats Corbin, wins the title. Nakamura wins the Royal Rumble. And this sets up Nakamura Styles for WrestleMania. That's how the title picture should go now from here on out. It should go from Jinder to Cena, Cena to Corbin, Corbin to AJ, AJ to Nakamura. That's a perfect clear-cut plan to get you to WrestleMania.
We all know they're not going that route, though. Even though
that's very good.
That's a very good build-up, a very good way to get the title from one guy to the next. But I completely doubt that they're going to do that route.
That's the sad part. And see the whole thing? See how easy it is, though? All the building blocks are there. This is not complicated. This is not rocket science. Their pieces of the puzzle are there. All they got to do is put them in place, and it's easy to see. And, of course, like you said, Sage, they're going to fuck this up. They're going to find a way to really fuck this up. But point being, it should not be this way. With something this easy, where I'm telling them right here on fucking Wednesday, June 21st, 2017, they should already be like, shit. You know, this is the booking through WrestleMania. Their SmackDown storylines now are booked. Jinder to Cena, Cena to Corbin, Corbin to AJ, AJ to Nakamura. Simple. Royal Rumble's already booked. Nakamura wins. I mean, this is cakewalk.
I'll even take Rusev to beat Jinder.
Yeah. They can do that if they want to give Rusev a short little run in there too. They can do that. You know, there's many things that they can do. It's all a clear cut path to make one of the biggest matches in WrestleMania history and let that crowd feel something like they've never felt before. Now, even if they do go this way, which we all agree that we don't think they're going to do because they're going to fuck it up. But even if they do go this route, they're going to fuck it up either way by putting Lesnar and Reigns in the fucking main event over Styles and Nakamura. That's going to be the sick part of the whole thing in the end because Vince is so fucking hard for Roman, he could probably smash his dick against a rock. His dick would fucking pound that rock into rubble with the fucking hard.
His dick will crush the rock to rubble. It's so sad, man, but it's fucking true, bro. That's the sad part. Sad but true, man.
I mean, Vince probably orgasms looking at Roman without even touching himself. All he has to do is hear his music. Him standing there with the duck lips. And Vince is like, oh! Like, that's all it takes. That's all it takes. And, alright, Roman, you got your fourth WrestleMania main event in a row. And now you're gonna beat Brock Lesnar clean. And we're gonna give AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura the co-main event. It's like, fuck you, Vince. Oh my god.
You know that's what they're gonna do, man.
Yeah. It's sad, bro. But see, I just booked the rest of the year for SmackDown's title picture leading up to WrestleMania 34 right now. I booked it. All they gotta do is do that and everything will be fine. Seriously. Yeah,
bro, they're not gonna do that. It's too easy.
Yeah, cause Vince is fucked in the head and he wants to complicate everything to where he's backed up against the wall come WrestleMania to where he's shitting his fucking pants where they got a book on the fly like 2 hours before the show even hits the air. That's the problem. If they would do, God, if I was in that company, things would be different, man. Please hire me in creative. I would fucking turn that around so quick. Get me on SmackDown with Ryan Ward and the Road Dogg and let Vince McMahon just take a back seat. I will fucking book SmackDown to be the crown jewel of that company, and I'm not even talking shit. We're in June. I just gave you 10 months worth of planning that they can do very easily with the snap of a finger, and all they gotta do is put it into motion right now. 10 months. 10 months of booking I gave off of one fucking match. And I didn't even have to think that hard. It was just there. Fucking shame, bro. Shame.
The thing about them is that they don't just have one guy who does creative. They have a team of guys. They have like 12 to 15 writers. Quote unquote, WWE creative geniuses. And honestly, they haven't done a goddamn genius thing their whole careers. The last best thing that they've done for creative, honestly, was the fucking Danny Bryan storyline. That's,
and not even, because you know why? The beginning story had nothing to do with like how they ended up how they ended up whatever. How they finished it.
There should only be two men.
I think you're trying to say that wasn't their
potential plan.
That wasn't their initial plan.
Exactly.
Right. When they executed that plan. But they had no choice to do it because of the whole Brock Lesnar beating Undertaker thing.
I thought it was because CM Punk left.
Well, that happened, of course, yeah. But the fact that, you know, they wanted to send the crowd home happy because Brock Lesnar beating Undertaker, it literally, like, had the entire crowd mad. Right, T? You was there.
Oh, I after the Undertaker lost and the Divas match was up next, I left. I got out of my seat and I walked around the concourse because I was in such fucking shock.
But you didn't leave the stadium. You stayed there.
Yeah, I stayed. I just walked around because I was in shock. I just needed some time to myself. And there was like legit probably 3,000 to 5,000 people. I'm talking like this massive crowd. Cause I was standing there by where they walk out and they're just walking out the doors. I'm telling you, I seen grown men with just tears rolling down their face. I'm not even kidding you. People were crying. People were pissed. They left. They didn't care.
Dude, this guy was sitting next to me left. And he was enjoying every second of it. And I was pissed. Ask him. I was pissed.
Yeah, he was frustrated.
I was tight, bro. I was pissed.
How did you enjoy that, man? Take or lose? Huh?
Look, I'm gonna be honest. I've never been a Undertaker fan. I respect him, don't get me wrong. But if it's Taker versus Brock, I've always been a Brock
fan. I've been a Brock fan too, hell yeah.
From the beginning.
Hell yeah.
So I'm sorry. Brock is my guy. And to see the reaction in people's face.
Not to beat Taker though. Not at Mania.
Made everything beat him even Mania, more sweet.
Beat him any other day, not at Mania.
I couldn't even tell you. I've never been in a crowd. Mm-hmm. I've never, ever, and probably never will be again ever be in a crowd where you just feel the energy fucking leave your body along with everyone else's?
It's like everybody coming at the same time.
Never hearing such silence. The dead of silence where only thing you could hear is the running air conditioners in that huge dome. There was legit
gas.
There was not a sound. It's like as if someone killed everybody at the same time. That crowd literally died. It was such a shock to the system, and I'm sure that's why a lot of people left. They fucking left. And you know what was funny? It was almost as if there was this black cloud hanging over WrestleMania, because I'll never forget it, man. We walked out of there. The fucking wind was so strong. The wind was whipping around. You know, there was lightning in the fucking sky. Next thing we know, we get in the hotel and fucking downpours. It's like, there was
because they killed The Undertaker, and so the fucking weather's all fucked up now. Remember, yeah. he controls lightning and thunder and shit.
Yeah, it's like, it was the creepiest fucking thing, because it's like the weather really went accordingly to The Undertaker losing his streak. I mean, it was a crazy night. I'll never be able to, I mean, I can explain it the best way I can, but you would have had to be there to really feel it, and that's why I want to go back to New Orleans, and I hope Undertaker does have one more. I pray he has one more hurrah, especially with Cena. I really, really do. I don't think that will happen.
But come on, man, after that last battle with Roman, I just let the man rest, please. Get it over. I mean, the last two matches was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was. That
for a fact, it was hard to watch. I even think the Bray Wyatt one was even worse than the Shane was even worse than the Roman one. He's too old. That's it. He doesn't have the same momentum, energy.
I don't know. Let's see what happens, because he's still not officially retired yet.
Yeah.
They haven't formally announced it.
I remember making this joke, and I can honestly see it happen. He's going to collapse in that ring. It's either he dies or he just straight up passes out and can't walk.
Hope you're wrong.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong. But I hope I don't get to see him again in the ring fighting.
He's going to be in the ring again.
At least not a one-on-one match.
He's gonna be great again. Hopefully it's to announce his retirement though.
One thing we know for sure. If Undertaker does ever get in a ring again to wrestle, it will be the last time. Either he's wrestled his last match, or he's gonna do one more time. We're at that place in the road now where we know either he's done, or there's just one more. It will not go beyond one more. He's at the end.
He has to be.
And that's one thing we definitely know, and it's just,
he has to be at the end, man. There's nothing else he needs to prove, man. I think at this point, the only reason he's wrestling is two reasons. One, obviously, that $2 million, sweet, sweet $2 million for one match. For 20, 30 minute match. And, I think Taker has way too much pride, man. I think he wants to prove to himself, nah, I could still hang. And we all know.
I blame the fans.
And I know that, you know, us watching, it just makes it's hard to watch, bro.
Yeah.
It's hard to be a Taker fan and watch his work, man.
I'm not a Taker fan. It's hard to watch.
It's hard to watch because you want him to leave on a good note. But you want him to leave.
Too late for that.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, again, you know, I always say it, man.
He should have
put Bray over, and that was it, man. After his loss to Brock, there's nothing else no more. There's no more streak. Bray should have fucking retired you.
did not miss the main event.
Bray should have retired Drew, and they should have fucking just booked Bray strong after that punch. Yes, of course not. Of course not. That's why everybody laughs. That's why everybody laughs at Bray, and that's why that made me an even more hardcore Bray fan. Because I think Bray should have defeated The Undertaker and should have retired his ass.
It was the perfect setting to do it if they wanted to build another character that's Undertaker-esque. I mean, not like
the closest thing to him that we had.
Yeah, he's the closest thing to Taker that we could have had going into
the... Sammy's the closest Daniel Bryan that we have right now.
Yeah.
Of course, we're not going to get what we want, man.
But I mean, taking Money in the Bank in effect in how I laid out WrestleMania 34, I mean, WrestleMania 34 honestly should look like this. Your three headlining matches should be Nakamura Styles, Triple H and Kurt Angle, and Reigns and Lesnar. Now, I'm not even going to shit all over the Reigns and Lesnar match because they did have a good match. And I'm sure
they actually did have a good match. It wasn't
I'm sure this match is going to be very good. It's going to be very hard hitting. But the thing that we're going to shit on as fans is the end result. It's not going to be the match. It's going to be the result. So I mean, right there, those are three great matches that can make this WrestleMania fucking epic right there. Angle's last match with Hunter, Styles Nakamura, Lesnar Reigns, and if this is a dream scenario, but by a very small, like slim to none, very tiny chance that Taker comes back, Taker and Cena. Big four matches, that's all you need. The show would sell itself and be one of the biggest WrestleManias to ever be put on.
So Styles Knox, Trips, Angle.
Yep.
Taker Cena, and what was the other one?
Lesnar Reigns.
Should be Cena and out of whoever.
We should have had Cena Taker this year, actually.
Yep. Should.
I remember them talking about that, hyping it up.
I mean, that's what people saw.
No, there was never nothing confirmed.
Yeah, I think it was legit.
And Sage said this in one of my videos, but it's what Sage told me that leads me to believe that maybe Taker is going to go one last time and that dream match with Cena will happen. Because at the WrestleMania 34 press conference, who closed it out? They had The Undertaker come out in his full ring gear, not as Mark Calloway, as The Undertaker. And he took the mic.
Mania 34.
Yep. And he took the mic. He put it right up to his mouth, and he looked at the fans, just looked around, and he's like, let the good times roll. Now, you're telling me if you're going to have Taker promote that press conference where he lost the streak and come out in full gear, that you're not going to have him involved there. I think there's that shred of a chance that he's going to have that one for that.
A little too much because I'll say yes. For simple fact, it could mean he's retiring. His retirement ceremony might be that one. So
Let me tell you why I think it's going to be Cena versus Taker for Taker's retirement. When Cena faced Styles, I believe it was at SummerSlam, right?
It was at Royal Rumble, wasn't it?
No. First time.
Oh, Money in the Bank and then at SummerSlam afterwards. So, SummerSlam.
What okay. did Cena do when he was exiting the ring?
He left his armband in the ring, placed it, and he walked out.
Now, what did Undertaker do last year, WrestleMania 32?
Well, Undertaker and Cena are two different calibers.
Wait, but what did Taker do?
He took his gloves off, he took his coat off, he took his hat off, and he set it in the middle of the ring, just like Cena did with his armbands.
He did, but Taker did that at 32. Then, this year.
Oh, 32, he just left his gloves.
He left the glove, but this year, he left the hat, the coat, and the gloves, right?
Yep.
To me, that's symbolism. And symbolism says a whole lot, especially with a character such as The Undertaker. Because when Triple H and Taker fought, I believe it was the one that you told me about on T and the Hell in the Cell. What WrestleMania was that? 28?
Oh, WrestleMania 28, yeah.
How did Triple H and Taker sell that match?
End of an era.
This was it. Yeah, but how? By not saying a single word, right?
Yep.
They legit stared each other down, stared at the sign, and stared at each other, and then did the taunt, and that was it. Yeah. They didn't say a single word. That was all symbolism. Hold on.
First of all, if this was any other company, like Honor, New Japan, I would have gave you that. But we're talking about a company who can't book in months. Imagine years. So the whole Cena and the Taker thing, I can't see that happening. If there was any time to execute it, they would have done that way before the Bray Wyatt stuff. Well, maybe it's true that, you know, it might be next year. But I know I remember hearing the idea of the Cena stuff was primarily Kevin Dunn and Cena himself.
Kevin Dunn doesn't book.
No, but they're the one that came out with the proposal of the wedding at WrestleMania. I mean, the proposal at WrestleMania.
That's because Kevin Dunn's the fucking executive producer of Total Divas and Total Bellas. Yeah. That's why, because they're probably going to air that shit on the show.
Oh, exactly. They definitely are. Hell yeah.
Definitely will. So the Undertaker.
That's why.
I would love to believe that, but knowing this company, nah.
See, but okay, that's right. Yeah, they're not known for doing that, right?
At all.
But you gotta understand, Undertaker wrestles once a year. Yeah. How the fuck is he gonna be injured, or how can they not book in advance with a man who only wrestles one time a year?
Plus,
he made like one appearance on SmackDown prior to Mania. Like,
but I know people saying that, he wanted to get this one over with and then do his hip surgery. Because he didn't want to do the surgery and then, you know, wrestle again and he might fuck it up.
Well, don't forget.
It's not like he's wrestling right away. He has time to recover.
One thing.
He's not going to be right in the ring all over again. No. If he
there's one thing that definitely sticks out. And that is in January. Cena won the title from AJ. And I remember when Cena was standing in the ring after he won the title. What was the first thing that happened when that WrestleMania logo was hanging up in the background? Cena was in the ring with the title. You guys remember what happened?
No.
Crowd went nuts and they started chanting, Undertaker. And Cena was just looking around and he kind of gave a little smile, like you could tell that Cena wanted it, the crowd.
The only time I remember that Cena mentioned anything to Undertaker was when he was feuding with fucking The Miz and Maryse, and he fucking straight up shat all over The Miz, and he said, oh, well, if it was up to me, I would have been facing The Undertaker. Like, I was like, wow, that, I understand this shit is scripted, but that's sort of a fucking dick thing to say. If it was up to me, I'd rather be having a match with The Undertaker instead of with people the likes of you. Like, you understand that's a real dick thing to say. I don't care.
They did that 2 weeks after the crowd, or they did that like a month after Cena stood in the ring and the crowd was chanting Undertaker. It's like they remembered it, so they teased it. And one thing you got to remember, the company really doesn't have to book Cena and The Undertaker. The history sells itself. the whole thing, it really sells itself. Like, if you guys were watching back in 2002 when Cena debuted, you had Cena in the back as a young kid after having his first match. Undertaker comes up to him, shakes his hand as a sign of respect.
Yeah.
And next thing...
He's been pushing Cena since way back then, bro.
Yep.
He was always looked at as the next top guy. Yeah, super to get that rub, first off, he had a match with Angle. And he came really close to defeating him. That's a hell of a rub. And then that backstage segment with The Undertaker giving him a pound. Like, yeah, you did good, kid. Yeah. Like, bro, he was primed from the beginning to be the next top guy. Whether he would have come up with the rapper gimmick or not, he was still going to be primed to be the top guy. Regardless of what we think, bro. He was always primed for that spot, man. But anyways, I mean, we totally went totally off topic. What are your final grades for Money in the Bank, though? With everything that we've said just now, everything that we've seen, and well, what do you guys would grade Money in the Bank tonight?
Yeah, and remember, grade it as a whole. I mean, we know the main event was great, but look at the rest of the show. That's the key.
Damn, I forgot. I think I gave it like a 5.
You giving it a 5?
I'll give it a 6.5.
6.5?
Yeah.
Capital P. What about you, T? Well, what are you looking at? What type of grade you giving them?
I mean, honestly, when you take everything into effect, one match can't make a show good. It really can't. I mean, you look at 90% of the show was nothing but illogical or just out of place or fucked finishes. Even if some matches were good, like the tag match was good, but still, fuck finish, that deducts from that. And with just one match really coming out 100% good and everything else kind of leaving you like with what the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The show's definitely a thumbs down show. It failed for Money in the Bank. And considering what Money in the Bank was to what they made it into now with a brand exclusive and just making one match good out of everything that we saw and everything else they put really no care into, I gotta be hard and I gotta be critical on the show and I gotta give it a straight up 5. I really do, because everything else, if you would have taken that match...
It's really gonna seem like it's a bad thing. Yeah, you're making it seem like it's a bad thing. I mean, they're the one who booked this.
Yeah, I mean,
it seem like, oh, I don't want to do this. Like, no, this is what we do. We review these shows and we give it to you straight. We don't sugarcoat this shit.
We don't get paid to sugarcoat it.
Nah, like, even if we were getting paid, I still tell you straight up. They did a piss poor job. This is Money in the motherfucking Bank. The repercussions of this show actually have, you know, consequences, you know, and they leak into what we see going into the summer, going into the winter months, and into the fall, and then into the winter months, because you have up to a year to hold that motherfucking briefcase. You understand? You have up to a year. It's not like, oh, well, yeah, it's just he holds it up until here. No, man, that's 12 months. That's 12 months you can hold that bitch. And fucking Seth Rollins took 9 months to cash his bitch in. So, you understand? Like, the repercussions of this match and of this type of match and of this briefcase, it has long-term repercussions. And I understand, like, what you just said, P, that, you know, they don't do well with long-term booking. However, oh, absolutely. And, of course, we all know this. However, if they do it right, And when WWE does something right, they do it right.
But that's like
1 in 6 years. Yeah, that's it's a rarity when they do. It's a rarity. But here's hoping that they actually do it right. And unfortunately, on this pay-per-view, they didn't do it right. No. They didn't do it right. And T, if you gotta be hard on them, go for it, bro. Don't make it seem like, oh damn, I don't want to do it. Nah, man, do it. Do it. You gotta do it.
We understand. We're all fans from early young age. So I understand.
I mean, it's the lowest grade of given a SmackDown pay-per-view since the brand split, and this should have been one where I've given it close to the highest grade, and it turns out that this is the poorest SmackDown pay-per-view since the brand split. I mean, one good match. I mean, the title match, the fact that they had to duplicate it from Backlash, that they had to duplicate the whole thing and just add Legends at ringside, which was pointless, that took away from it too, and why I put my rating so down. I mean, the show's thumbs down, like 5 is average, middle in the road, but I'm putting this at a 5 out of 10 with a thumbs down show.
Yeah.
That's why I did, bitch.
I gotta say I agree, man. The women's Money in the Bank ladder match, it was alright, but the finish really hurt.
If there's anybody I'm really disappointed out of all the women, would be Natalya. Cause I expect Natalya to take a bump. But I saw her take a Carmella bump, which is a little slight improvement from a Eva Marie bump. We all know that's true.
I mean, it was a piss poor match. It was very, very disappointing. I believe the reason it was so bad is because they were nervous. They were nervous as fuck. It was the first ever match like this. So, you know, they were very, very, you know, nervous of doing a good job and impressing people. And unfortunately, they didn't do a very good job. but that match was horrible. The tag match, again, it was a really good match, but the finish was absolute dog shit. What was after that? What was after the tag match?
I think it was a tag team.
Naomi versus Lana. Horrible fucking match.
Hot Lana.
We spoke about this. It was absolute dog shit. I mean, yeah, Lana has, you know,
very hot waves.
No, Lana was much better. Oh, there's a guy back there. Lana's a much better version of Eva Marie.
Yes.
But, again, that's not really saying much, to be honest with you. I mean, again, it was horrible, absolute horrible. What was after the women's match?
The WWE title match.
Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton. We've more than spoke about this match, so there's no need to go back there. It was the worst, and honestly, the main event, Money in the Bank match, was the only thing to really speak about. The only thing that was good, and you can't really give a good grade when it's a one-match show. Yeah. So, if I just have to grade the Money in the Bank match alone, I mean, they'd probably get a fucking a 7 out of 10. But
because
I have to grade an entire show, you know, I gotta agree with T, man. It probably gets a 5 from me. Gets a 5 from me overall. The tag match was good. The finish was bad. The women's match absolutely sucked. The women's ladder match, it was fucking disappointing as hell. But what hurt it the most was the finish. And yeah, man, it was just very piss poor, bro. Very piss poor. Yeah. But, I give it a 5. So we got
What you gave it? 6.5.
6.5. I gave it a 5. You gave it a 5. That's about it. There's nothing else to speak about this pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's true, man. Well, we did what we could, and...
I think he's still lucky. No. What's that, T?
We did what we could, and we covered it well.
Yeah, man, we did what we had to.
As well as we could.
Yeah. So you want to close this out, T?
Yes, sir. This has been episode number 66 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. If you want to leave your comments down below, let us know what you thought of Money in the Bank. If you're leaving comments on YouTube, feel free to do that. Leave likes on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. We're at 316, Austin 316 subscribers. Make sure if you're listening on iTunes that you leave a 5-star rating and subscribe there for free as well. And we'll be back with you next week for another episode of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And then as far as on YouTube, Sage and I will be back at some point later this week for news and rumors. And hopefully Capital P will join in. But for Capital P and for Sage, I'm your host, Big T. Thank you for tuning in for episode number 66 of the Beyond the Ring of Big T Wrestling Podcast for Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. And we will see you next week for another great podcast, or later on this week for a great news and rumors podcast. Take care. I love you all. And good night, everybody.